I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Chris Ciccinelli. Chris is the CEO and president of Pure Romance. And Chris, in the past 12 years, you've really helped transform Pure Romance from a small mom and son business into an international business with what? How many consultants do you have today?
Over 20,000 consultants.
As compared to what, 300 or so?
When I started in 2000, we had 300.
Yes, so quite a transformation. And this week on Wednesday, you're getting ready to have, 3,000 of those consultants descend on Greater Cincinnati?
Yeah, there'll be about 4,000 women that'll be coming into Cincinnati. It's great because we get to show off Cincinnati. We get to show the charm. We get to show kind of the rebirth that's going on right now with all the restaurants that are coming in, the hotels that are coming in. And these women come and they come for training. They come to learn how to get the motivation that they need. These women are running small businesses at home and they come to look for us for the information on how they can continue to keep building it. So you have four women coming to get some education. Don't be scared if you see a bunch of women with pink bags on the street.
Well, and on Wednesday, you're actually having a big celebration, aren't you?
Yeah, so August 6th, 11:30 a.m., the mayor is making this the proclamation that this is the day of pure romance. So I know Patty's excited because this is finally she got her day that she's always been wanting.
And so folks listening would like to come and participate in the day of pure romance. Everybody's invited, correct?
You know, everybody's invited, not just the consultants, but also the whole entire city. This city's helped us build this company, and we want to share that day with everybody.
Well, I'm sure you'll get a lot of attendance, and you're taking advantage of your fairly new corporate headquarters in downtown Cincinnati by exposing all these consultants to it, too.
Yeah, I think they're going to be excited when they see their name up with, the Fifth Thirds, Great American Financial, all that. I think they're going to feel like, wow, we are really part of a huge growing business and also a great city. So I'm excited for them to see the pure romance in the sky.
And again, this celebratory kickoff is at 11:30 on Wednesday down at Fountain Square. Now, Do they need to wear any particular thing?
No, just come. We'll be handing out T-shirts. We're going to probably paint the square pink.
Painting the square pink. That sounds like a great time. And again, if folks would like to learn more about this, learn more about Pure Romance, Chris, what is your contact information?
They can go to pureromance.com.
We've been talking to Chris Ciccinelli. Chris is the president and CEO of Pure Romance. For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is Business Wise. Our guest today is Chris Ciccinelli. Chris is CEO and president of Pure Romance. And Chris, Pure Romance has constantly been doing things, it seems, over the last dozen or so years. But you made a big move earlier this year at the beginning of 2014. You actually opened your corporate headquarters to a new corporate headquarters downtown. What made you decide to move into downtown Cincinnati?
Well, you know, it was a big discussion between, you know, my mom and myself. We talked and looked at so many different locations. You know, we looked at Northern Kentucky. We looked at Florida. Both of us have places down there. We were going back and forth about where do we want to locate the office. And so finally, her and I came and had a meeting, and she said, you know, I want to be in Cincinnati. This is where it all started. This is where the business was founded. These are our roots. So I want to make sure that we stay in Cincinnati. Well, from that time, we started to look in different places, you know, everywhere. You know, we could Norwood to, you know, Eastgate to wherever. And what we saw when we saw downtown was this huge, vibrant energy, just a lot of stuff going on. And we knew we needed to be part of that. We're a growing company. We want to be part of that growing mojo that was going on downtown with the banks of revitalization of Over the Rhine. Everything that was happening, we just knew that that was the spot for us to be. So we found a location. And in January, we moved 115 employees into that. We still kept our distribution center in Loveland. So we have mass roots that are going to keep us here in Ohio.
And this week, you are bringing, 3,000 or 4,000 of your closest 4, consultants?
4,000 of our closest family members will be coming in here, marching into Cincinnati. They'll be excited about seeing the building, seeing what's happening, and just kind of really getting involved. I mean, there's so many events that are happening while they're here. They're going to be going to Horseshoe Casino for the Patty Brisbane Foundation event, which is my mom's charity. They're going to be going to Dine Around Cincinnati, where they don't get to stay in just the convention center. They go and they get to try different places like Soto, McCormick & Schmitz, Buona Brasa. And they really get to see the charm of Cincinnati. There's huge events that are taking place at Duke Energy. They're staying at the new Renaissance that we just built downtown. So these women are excited about the education and the things that they're going to be learning here when they come.
And on Wednesday, to kick everything off, the mayor has named proclaimed
Day of Pure Romance, August 6th at 11:30. We are painting the square pink.
And if folks listening today would like to come, be part of it, visually see themselves what's going on downtown and what's going on in your company?
They can go to pureromance.com, check us out. Also, they can follow me on my blog at Pink Collar CEO.
We've been talking to Chris Ciccinelli. Chris is the CEO and president of Pure Romance. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, a recent column that we wrote in the Inquirer related to instilling entrepreneurial skills into children. Some of those discussion points I think are very important for our children to learn, and unfortunately, many of them are not taught in schools.
No, I think it's great for children to have entrepreneurial skills, although I kind of resent it when my daughter wants to get paid for doing household chores. So sometimes we can create monsters, but it is good to give them financial education so they understand the basic fundamentals of finance and what it really takes to make money.
And not just at an older age. You can actually start teaching a child the relationship between work and money and what it takes to buy a certain item when they're a very young age. I know both of our children, we played money games with them when they were little. Now you can actually also have your children go online, help them research birthday presents, look at different websites, determining what value they get from one website, one merchant versus another. Let them get very involved and engaged in those kinds of decisions. And then certainly if you can show them the magic of compounding, which I wish somebody would have showed me when I was a child, but if you can show a child early in their life how when they invest money, it generates more money through interest and dividends and capital gains, that's a beautiful thing.
Well, and I think goal setting is also helpful. They have to learn how to set and accomplish goals and know what it means to sacrifice in order to achieve goals, because normally that's what entrepreneurs have to do.
Well, it's about making choices, and it can also go further than just about financial skills and business oriented, but also just making good choices in life. So when you have to prioritize and set goals, it really is much broader and deeper than as it relates to a business impact. Certainly communication skills are very important for children to learn in the day and age that we live in now, when children are just texting and on social media. That lack of communication is really critical. And in business, as you know, it's important to develop personal relationships with people. People do business with people who they like.
Right. And it's hard to do that electronically. And I think also just being a role model, you know, explaining to your children what you're doing in your business, whether you're an employee or a business owner, it's still important for them to understand the business aspects of what you do.
Next time your child asks for the latest video game, use it as an opportunity to allow them to figure out how they can earn the money. Be creative with them, inspire them, and have fun with them. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Tom, recently we wrote a story in the Inquirer about how to instill entrepreneurial skills in children, and we also talked about it here on BusinessWise. And I just want to talk about very specifically some ways that parents can help encourage that.
Well, you know, after we had that article, I got some pushback that said you can't really teach entrepreneurial skills, that people are either born with those or they aren't. And really, I don't think that's true. If you look around at a lot of colleges, they actually have entrepreneurial studies majors now. And I think a lot of the skills that entrepreneurs need can be taught.
They absolutely can. And I think they can be taught at a much earlier age than in college, because I think what's happened in our society is that children, when they're first born and as they grow up, as parents, we encourage them to be creative. We play with them, make believe. But then when they get in school, unfortunately, it seems like they are always being taught directly towards the tests. So they are discouraged from being creative. They need to think in straight lines. And I believe personally that that may have had something to do with the lack of entrepreneurial types of skills in children. So what we can do as a society, I think, is help encourage creativity. For example, I serve on a board for the Economics Center at the University of Cincinnati, and one of the programs they have is Student Enterprise Program, and they actually go into the schools, the Economics Center, and they have programs for middle school children and elementary children that they can set up their own stores. They get points and they get rewards for attending class, for making good choices, for doing their homework, and then they also have this store that these children then use those points to make certain decisions on if they want to spend them. We need more of that type of activity in the schools.
Well, I agree. Junior Achievement is a program that's been around a long time. I was a mentor years ago in that program, and it's the same type of thing. The students develop products that they then learn to sell, and they make money at that.
And I believe that as a state, even our leaders are realizing that we need to encourage children at a much younger age to think about workforce development, starting vocational education, for example, in schools at a much earlier age.
So you think we can teach entrepreneurial skills to both students and children?
I think that we should be able to teach entrepreneurial type skills to children. We just have to learn to do it. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a vice president and principal with Ball & Gaynor Investments. And Ellie, you're about to celebrate at Ball & Gaynor your 25th year in business. That's quite an achievement for any company. Tell us about the management team and the group of people you have at Ball & Gaynor.
Well, I'm very pleased and proud to work with a very capable team. We have a seasoned, experienced group, 15 portfolio managers, and they average 27 years experience, 10 years with Ball & Gaynor, and over 25 professional distinctions, such as MBA, CFA, CPA. The firm's grown to 33 employees. And probably what's most exciting, we've grown from our starting phase till now to having $12 billion in assets under management and advisement. So that's a nice number.
So how have you attracted that much in terms of assets under advisement?
Well, our philosophy makes an awful lot of sense. Companies that pay and grow their dividend pay their investors now, and they pay them later. And right now, they're paying the dividend. What they're paying now is very close to what a 10-year treasury is paying. So you can have your cake and eat it too. And
is that the primary benefit of your investment process, that your investors put their money into funds or into stocks, really, that pay dividends, and ultimately those dividends continue to grow? So even if the stock price were to stay flat for a period of time, they're still increasing their assets because of the dividends?
Well, yes. People forget that 40% of the return from the S&P 500 over time has been from dividends. And that's one advantage. The second point is that when a company pays a dividend, it forces a discipline upon them. They can only make their best two or three choices for investment in the company or acquisition. The rest they're sharing with their shareholders. So there's a lot of forced discipline. So they're hopefully rationalizing and making their best choices. And the ability for us to reinvest the cash flow over time works out very well for a portfolio.
How do you feel, Ellie, about the outlook for the stock market, and how does that tie into your investment approach?
Well, over the past 5 years, the stock market has truly been on a tear. You know, from the lows of 2009 until now, we've made tremendous progress. Some would argue we might be due for a pullback. It's unusual that we haven't had one. So with that in mind, I think it should be particularly attractive to people to be invested in stocks of a very high quality, stocks that would hold up well should a storm occur. And that's exactly where we're positioned.
If folks listening would like more information about Ball & Gaynor, what's your website?
www.ball-gaynor.com.
We've been talking to Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is the vice president and principal at Ball & Gaynor. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is a vice president and principal with Ball & Gaynor. And Ellie, in this environment that's, I wouldn't say necessarily challenging, but certainly it's difficult to grow in this economic environment with very slow growth that we have. Do you have an example of a local Cincinnati company that really is doing well?
I do, and it's the company I work for. We're privately held, so we're not in the paper all the time, but our firm, Ball & Gaynor, has been able to grow its assets under management and advisement 20% just over the last 12 months. And that's a very rapid clip in this pedestrian environment. What's catching on is our dividend growth approach to investing. It's been working well. not only have our own clients benefited, but we've been able to attract clients through brokerage firms around the nation.
What is it about the type of services that you guys are providing that's allowing you to generate that amazing growth?
When you think about it, we're 5 years into an economic recovery. So there could be a correction around the corner, or historically there would have been. So people want a little insurance. So if you buy high quality names, you're going to hold up better when the storms come. But in the meantime, people have to eat. And so the fact that they're paying a dividend, better yet, a growing dividend, they have more and more to spend every year.
Dividends are good. It's cash out the door of a company, right? You can't hardly make that up on an accounting technique.
Well, they're a wonderful indicator on what's going on inside a company. Because as you said, they can't pay them if they don't have them. So we know the earnings are there. And then the confidence with which a board of directors is increasing that dividend, it's a wonderful indicator. If they can say we're sharing another 10% with you next year, that's a pretty good sign.
What if inflation kicks up again as we come out of these economic doldrums? Are dividend stocks still good stocks to hold?
Dividend stocks are a wonderful thing to hold for investors trying to preserve their purchasing power, because if you have companies that are raising these dividends, they're going to do much better than the false safety an investor thinks they have when they lock into a bond. Today, a 10-year treasury is in the 2.6% range. 10 years from now, inflation is going to take an incredible bite out of their earnings. So you're much safer in a stock for the long run that's raising its dividend.
We've been talking to Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is the vice president and principal at Ball & Gainer. Ellie, if people would like more information about Ball & Gainer or reach you, how can they do that?
Our website is a good place to start, www.ball-gainor.com.
We've been talking to Ellie Moffitt. Ellie is the vice president and principal at Ball & Gainer. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Noel Gauthier and Matt Anthony. And Noel and Matt are the co-founders of a company called LaunchWorks, as well as a business accelerator called First Batch. But first, let's talk about LaunchWorks. How and why did you all decide to create that organization?
Sure. So we actually started out together going to grad school at UC in the design program. And so we both worked together a lot on both local manufacturing and entrepreneurial issues in design. And so we already had that passion in working together and had been doing some amount of freelance work both on our own, and kind of decided that we have complementary skill sets. I do a little bit more of the front end and drawing, and Noel seems to be more on the back end of, you know, physically making things work and doing some of the manufacturing side. So we thought together it helps out on putting those skills together to form a company and be able to successfully work together.
No, LaunchWorks. Mm-hmm. Then from that, you all recently created a new business accelerator called First Batch. Maybe you can talk about that a little.
You know, at the LaunchWorks as a two-person crew, we kind of found ourselves doing all the roles. And oftentimes we would find ourselves on the phone looking and calling companies and trying to get stuff made. And much to kind of to our surprise, it was really easy in the area. The more we got on the phone, the more companies we found out that were willing and able to work with young companies. And we got excited about that. And the more people we told, other people got excited about it. And we decided this is a resource we needed to show and really kind of demonstrate how to use this. And that was really the first idea behind First Batch, was to really kind of take the iterative process you can do with a good manufacturing partner and show entrepreneurs and young companies how to utilize that in order to make physical products right here in the city.
So the candidate for First Batch would be somebody who already has a product, maybe a prototype of a product, mm-hmm. and you help them get that into the manufacturing process.
That's correct. We're really looking for companies that they figured out that core, that magical thing that they've gotten to work, and they can make it. Maybe their garage is full, their wife is saying, hey, it's time to get out of the living room, and they're looking to scale, and we can really say, here's how you can take that and build it to something that you can make 100 of, 1,000 of, 100,000 of.
Matt, I know you just recently named your second class. So how mm-hmm. many folks or how many businesses go through a class? Maybe you can share some of the who's in it and okay. how you chose them.
In the second class, we accepted four companies. We have 3D Kitbash, which is a company that is currently sculpting digital models and is looking at making a line of sports-related toys. We have Switcher, which is a company that is looking to take production level capabilities in cameras and camera control and be able to take that to a consumer market. And we have Ampersand Brand, which is looking to produce a line of sculptural, clever form bowls that they're looking to showcase local manufacturing techniques and materials through this product. And Ohio Valley Beard Supply, which produces a line of beard care supplies, and they're looking to figure out, how do I take the next step up and scale?
And if folks listening would like to learn more about First Batch or LaunchWorks, what's your contact information?
You can find us at firstbatch.org and thelaunchworks.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guests today are Noel Gauthier and Matt Anthony, and they are the co-founders of LaunchWorks and also First Batch. And gentlemen, First Batch, I know, is a business accelerator, and there's lots of business accelerators out there, and all of them do things a little bit differently. Maybe you can talk about how you're different and what you focus on.
First Batch is part of a smaller group in that we're kind of focused on physical products, you know, things you can pick up and sell. We also kind of differentiate ourselves beyond that, and so much as we're really focused on local manufacturing, on getting our entrepreneurs in front of and working with local manufacturers to get a better product and shorten their development time.
Well, it feels like we've gone full cycle because we've tried to be like the high-tech part of the Midwest when really our background as a region is more in manufacturing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that manufacturing is very high-tech. The manufacturing that's in the region, they're light, agile, they're aggressive, and they have the capabilities to work at scales that we're not typically used to.
You know, that's so interesting because I think that that whole vision of what manufacturing is to people, it is very much high tech these days. And it's not the old dirty factory that you envision when you think about manufacturing from years ago.
A really fascinating antidote to that is one of the larger kind of growing careers right now is robotic arm operator. We're not talking about lifting stuff off pallets and shoveling coal. We're talking about programming robotic arms.
Now, nowadays, when you go into a factory building, it's just the factory part is just as clean as the office part.
Often more so.
And Matt, you guys have been very instrumental in helping several young companies get to production faster. Maybe you can give some examples of some of the products that you've been involved with.
As LaunchWorks, we've actually helped a number of companies that are at kind of startup level. Even last year, we worked with a brandery company called Framery. So we worked on doing some of their design development for these interchangeable glasses and lenses systems. And they're 1 year later and very successful.
You've worked with some guitar manufacturer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so through First Batch last year, we had a startup called Hatchet Guitars come through the First Batch program. And so he was looking at, how do I take this prototype of a guitar that I've made that's a travel size instrument and be able to scale it up? And so we work with connecting him both on the manufacturing side and making it a more efficient process so that he could both make it a shorter time to produce and a smaller cost so that he could price it correctly.
So if people listening would like to learn more about LaunchWorks or First Batch, how they could get involved, even as a mentor, because I know part of what you do with First Batch is you put relationships together so that existing companies can help some of these young companies, don't you?
That's correct. First Batch is strong because of the manufacturers that we have involved and are interested in lending their time and our group of mentors. So what we're really looking for is manufacturers who listen and say, hey, this is cool, or mentors who want to give involved and volunteer their expertise.
What's your contact information?
You can find us at firstbatch.org and thelaunchworkswithane.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Todd Swarmstead. Todd is the founder and executive director of the American Sign Museum. And Todd, your family started ST Media back in 1906. Fast forward 108 years. Today, that company, which started developing a publication solely for the sign industry, the Sign of the Times magazine, is now certainly broadened into many other industries. But you decided that you think there's a real opportunity and as a legacy to start the American Sign Museum.
Yes, although I was publisher of all the magazines, the whole network of magazines, my particular interest was always in the sign industry. As I said, I worked about 28 years on the magazine, was always interested in history, looked around, saw there was no sign museum, got the idea to start a sign museum in 1999.
Well, people who have never been to the Sign Museum might not understand how that connects with history, but certainly anyone that's been there would understand that.
It's obviously the history of the sign industry, but when people come through it, what I explain to them that what it really is, it's the history of America as seen through the history of signs, and I point that out in my guided tour.
It's fascinating. I know that you recently moved the museum over to the Camp Washington area.
When we originally opened, we were in rented space in Walnut Hills, about 4,500 square feet. That was 2005. We outgrew that space. We bought the building in Camp Washington in 2009, had to remodel it. It was about a $3.3 million project. All that money came from outside of Cincinnati, but we opened June of 2012, so we've been open about 2 years.
It's beautiful, too. I was just shocked the first time I went in there, and just the walk down memory lane is fascinating. Main Street within the Sign Museum. Maybe you can share some of that.
A lot of people come to the museum, all different types and walks for different reasons. Certainly the sign industry, anybody in the design community wants to come. We do a lot of senior groups. That's that connection with Memory Lane. It prompts memories. It conjures up memories. And these are what I should point out are good memories. Back when things were maybe a little calmer, life was appreciated, craftsmanship was appreciated, not that hurry lifestyle that we're used to today.
And it's a great place to have events, isn't it? You actually welcome people who want to come to the Sign Museum to experience not only the signs, but to use it as a venue.
That's correct. When I designed the museum, we kept the space just for events. And actually that, although the signs in the museum are from all over the country, that particular space is just signs from Cincinnati.
If folks listening would like to visit the Sign Museum, take a tour, learn more about how they may have an event, what is your contact information?
The best place is the website, which is signmuseum.org. They can also call 513-541-6366.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Todd Swarmstedt. Todd is the founder and the executive director of the American Sign Museum. And before that, Todd was vice president for new product development for ST Media Group International, which has been publishing information and promoting information about the signs business for over 100 years. And Todd, recently National Geographic's Traveler magazine said that the American Sign Museum was an unknown gem of Cincinnati. Why do you think they believe it's such a gem on a really a nationally recognized basis?
Well, I think that's on many fronts. When you come to our Camp Washington location, the building is somewhat nondescript, and you're not expecting what you, when you walk in, all the displays. And I think that's part of it. The other thing is, this is the only public sign museum in the country. So Cincinnati has that exclusive ownership of the only sign museum in the country.
In addition to it being a museum, it's also a wonderful place for people to experience a lot of this history, but have events. Maybe you can share some of the types of events that's occurred at the Sign Museum.
We do a lot of the, I don't know if you call them standard events. We do a lot of wedding receptions, which are a lot of fun. We do corporate events, Procter & Gamble, FRCH, and the Rotary Club was there recently. We do bar mitzvahs, anniversary parties.
So it's more than just organizations and companies obviously can have their events there, but it sounds so much more fascinating than just in a hotel ballroom. I mean, this is something that really has a historical component in addition to the event.
Well, it's been called, and I think you referred to that earlier, as a walk down memory lane. It's a lot of interest. It's a way to experience the history of America through signs. And there's all those brightly colored neon signs, flashing signs that everybody has fond memories of are right there to look at.
How do you interact with students, and how do you use the Sign Museum as a learning laboratory as well?
Well, it's an excellent resource for schools. The issue has been trying to get the school buses or the buses there. That's about a $500 cost. But recently, we've been working with Xavier, and their student teachers and their Department of Education is helping us develop courses that meet state requirements, which is going to open the door for that.
Because, you know, signs and signage and branding and everything that goes along with the sign industry, it's just a huge component of business as it's in our past, present, and future.
If you go to the SBA website, one of the things that they talk about is the economic value of the on-premise sign. It's the thing that everybody forgets about. They're ready to open. They go, oh, my God, I need a sign. We say as a business without a sign is a sign of no business.
If folks listening would like to learn more information and where you're located, can you provide that?
Yeah, we're located in the Camp Washington area of Cincinnati. That's the Hopple Street exit. We're at 1330 Monmouth. You can find all this information on our website, which is signmuseum.org, or you can call us at 513-541-6366.
We've been talking to Todd Swarmstead, founder of the American Sign Museum. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner, and Stevens, your business advocate.